So we're back, and we're going to dive right into the causal fallacy. Right. So what is the causal fallacy?
It's assuming that you know the cause of an event when you don't. You can claim that X caused Y, but unless you have evidence that it did, it's a fallacy.
Right.
It more often takes the form of saying, well, X happened and then it was followed by Y, so X must be the cause of Y. That's
right.
Another version of the same thing. Just because something comes after another event doesn't mean the one that it came after caused it. There
right.
could be a lot of other events that actually produced it that took place at the same time as the one I thought was the cause but wasn't. So that's called ex hoc. Ergo propter hoc. No, post hoc. Ergo propter hoc. After this, therefore, it must be because
of it. He's going to be 84 years old, and he's still going to pull out of his mind. You know, I see this in ministry and in the word diagnosing, where a minister or even a parent or something is constantly creating causes that, in fact,
we're not really sure
that they're there.
That's right. That's
you know, like, you know, it's really when your sister married that guy that she totally changed. Well, maybe she already changed and was looking for that guy. You just didn't know that she was making that change yet.
Right. That's right.
So, but to say it's that or blaming something, you know, and sometimes motivated by ministry, it's a fallacy that ministers and pastors can get into where they're sort of diagnosing, and this goes back to the listening skills, they suggest you do not diagnose while you're listening, listen clearly for what's being said, not what you think is being said.
Yeah, and this one can become complicated as well because, and you touched on this, it may be that the cause of X are these five things.
Right.
And four of them were already in place. And then when the person came in contact with the fifth, that was sufficient to produce the effect.
Right.
But it's not the only cause of the effect. All of them are.
Right.
And so it can become very complicated, and you need to sort that stuff out carefully when
right.
you go to attribute causes.
You know, we have our Christian discernment class that's completed, and we suggest at times to do a family systems diagram. Well, all that really does is on a whiteboard, if something's very sensitive and you're trying to look for help, on a whiteboard you ask like 100 questions, any question you can think of. Like, and what happens, Dr. Clauser, is all of a sudden the pattern of what is the cause starts showing up again and again, and that's a helpful way to help somebody through
that's
it.
Right.
But the causal fallacy is, you know, a snap causal fallacy is something that experienced ministers have to really be careful because we've seen so many things.
It's a kind of hasty generalization.
It is.
Isn't it?
It's another form of a hasty generalization.
Right.
Okay, so let's go on to the fallacy of sunk cost.
I think everybody's familiar with this. There's some project or a belief into which I've invested a lot.
Right.
Invested in time, or I've spent a lot of my life on it. And so we become reluctant to give up on it, to see that it's just hopeless and not throw more time, more effort, more emotional investment, more money, whatever it is, into the same hole that's only going to be an empty hole.
Right.
It's never going to work. So it's mostly becoming emotionally invested in something and reluctant to give it up even when it's clear that it's false or it's not going to work.
Right. And I'll tell you, it takes courage to go against this fallacy because, I mean, I think in the workplace, you know, like you're working on something, and then it becomes clear to your supervisor or whatever, your boss, you know what, we can't do it. And then the boss says, you know what, we're going a different way, we're moving this way. And then the team member just feels so, like, frustrated, almost to the point where, you know, I put all this time into this, and now we're not going to do this. But there may be good reasons not to do it, but I know as a leader when you start something, you know, recently we started a kind of ministry social network, and Abby and Mitch and all of us were heavily invested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to do these mini courses that we're doing right here and put it on that network. And then it became clear that the best place for these mini courses was not on a new network with a new thing, but it was right here next to our regular courses. Okay? So we had to stop. We were in this for 3-4 months. Abby and Mitch learned how to code. I mean, all this other stuff, which, by the way, will not be lost to us.
Okay, good.
But still, I remember, like, part of the thing was the fallacy of sunk costs. You know, it's like, we can't quit now.
Yeah, and this has to be balanced against persistence.
Yeah.
Sometimes persistence is good.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, Thomas Edison, when he tried to invent the light bulb, needed a material to make the filament from.
Right.
Such that the filament would glow and produce a light if you ran a current through it, but not burn out right away.
Right.
And he tried over 700 different things before he hit the one that worked. Well, somebody might have made this argument, well, you're just invested in this. No, but no, you know, he had good reasons to think that it would work.
Well, and seeing that, I mean, CLI is an example of that. For the first 15 years, it just was really, really hard. It wasn't even going to work. So I guess there is discernment. Again, the discernment class. But there is a fallacy. You always check yourself, and even naming it. That's another thing I find, is naming something, at least in your mind. Am I walking down the fallacy of sunken cost here, or do I see something? The Lord still giving me the urgency for persistence to keep on going. Appeal to authority.
Yes. This is one we have to be very careful with, because the fact is that for every one of us, we hold a great, great many beliefs on authority.
Right.
So I was just giving an example. I asked you if you'd ever been to Bombay. I haven't either. But we both believe there is such a place.
Right.
Why? Well, it's in the Atlas.
Right. Right.
You open up the Atlas to India, and there's
Bombay.
The airline's listed as a place they fly to.
Right.
There are lots of authorities that are genuine authorities. The airlines ought to be able to know where their planes go.
Yeah.
The people that make an Atlas ought to know what the map of India looks like. So this is not a fallacy if it's an appeal to a real authority.
Right.
It's only a fallacy when you appeal to something as an authority that's not one.
Give
or you don't have any good reason to think it is.
Okay, what would be an example of that?
Well, suppose I were to take a comic book that I've read and get through the story, and the story says that there are UFOs from outer space.
Okay.
And they have visited us from somewhere near Alpha Centauri or something.
Okay.
And I say, wow, look at that. It's at least probable that we're being visited by UFOs from Alpha Centauri.
Because it's on the calendar.
Well, that's not an authority.
Right.
It's a matter of the reasons you have for thinking that something is an authority.
Right.
And we all have very good reasons to think that there's such a place as Bombay, or that the Amazon is the biggest river in the world, or whatever. There are all kinds of things we believe on authorities, but they're good authorities, and we know why they are.
A lot of times, and tell me if this is right, sometimes I've noticed in news stories, they'll appeal to authorities we've never heard of. So we're first of all trusting that this person is even an authority, or they don't even say what the authority said. It just seems like this: so and so said this, so and so said that, so and so said that, and I don't even know what so and so said, because you didn't even say what so and so said.
Well, then it's very proper to call them on this and ask about their appeal to authority. What grounds do we have for thinking that that person is an authority? And maybe they can produce it. Maybe they can say, well, this person was on the committee that considered this, debated it for a long time, and was one of the people that voted for the policy. All right, then that person ought to know what was discussed.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's just that, well, he worked in the same company as the people who did it, that doesn't count. He can work in the same company in a different city and have nothing to do with this and not know anything about it. So it has to do with evaluating the authorities themselves as to whether they're genuine authorities.
Now, to our Christian faith,
yes,
we appeal to authority.
Right, our authority is Scripture. Yes,
so
that's right.
How is this not a fallacy?
It's because of the way we come to believe the biblical message.
Okay.
And that is that as we read it or hear it preached to us or whatever it is in our experience self-evident
that this
is the truth about God from God. It doesn't mean that the record is perfect.
It has
no blemishes. Nothing like that. But the biblical message, the arc of redemption.
The
story
canonical
of
revelation.
That's right. It is preserved for us here and nowhere else. And we find that in our own experience, it's self-evident. This truth is self-evident. John Calvin put it this way. If we were asked how do we know Scripture comes from God, it's just the same as if we were asked how do we tell light from dark, black from white, sweet from bitter.
Right.
Scripture bears on the face of it such evidence of its truth as do white and black of their color, sweet and bitter of their taste. And if you'll indulge me, I'll give you a little more. Those who attempt to build up a firm faith in Scripture by argument are doing things backward. Scripture deigns not to submit itself to proofs and arguments, but owes the full confidence with which we should accept it to the testimony of the Spirit of God.
Well, I don't know how we could
I think
any further.
Good.
We're done with this. This section. Thank you, Dr. Clauser.
You're very welcome.
That was really